Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Watt Harris here with another Panther Rants podcast. It's a, at least here it's a jury Thursday. As we get close to the weekend. And of course a big Saturday coming up. At Heinz Field. So, let's get to it. We'll start off. First of all, I did some watching yesterday of working from home. I see that the both basketball teams for Penn Men's and Penn Women's are up and running. They had their first games. Pitt men's had theirs on Tuesday, and Pitt women's had theirs yesterday morning. I think it was around 11 a.m. they had theirs. It was 10 a.m. my time, so I flipped it on. On off for the Pitt men's, they start off slow. Obviously, when you have a young team, you're having jitters. I know that some of these guys, obviously, you know, they have a year under their belts, but new coach, new staff. And of course, there are some new players that are playing, new starters. But you know, some things I saw that I liked. I mean, as I brought up, and somebody mentioned this as well to me. Well, for one thing, it sucks to lose Parker Stewart and Marcus Carr, but I do like our backcourt a hell of a lot better than I did last year. I think with Xavier Johnson, Trey McGowan's, they're young, obviously, but these guys can move, they can create things, and I think they're just going to create more havoc. I mean, one thing we do miss for Parker Stewart is it'd be nice to have a sharpshooter in him, because he'd be a great complement to these guys. That's one thing I can say that we're obviously going to miss. Marcus Carr, I think he'll be a good, a decent player in Minnesota. I think he's more suited in the Big Ten than he is in the ACC. I just think with the guys we have now, they're more assertive. They can fly to the hoop, and they can create things. And pretty much just what they're going to have to do for the most part, because we don't have much of a front court right now. We lack an inside presence. I mean, we have Terrell Brown. He's not bad, but we need more guys. We have Sham Stevenson as well. But again, like I said, again, we need more bigs. And obviously, that should be pretty much one of the priorities in recruiting, is getting a big. But my thing is if we can land a decent big, I'd be more happy landing more talented guards and small forwards if we had to. Because I don't want them to recruit a big like a power forward or a center. I don't want them recruiting a guy just to be a body. Because at the end of the day, he's just a body. And he's taking up a scholarship. At this point, Pitt needs to recruit the best players available and get the best players. And most talented. If it means more guards and small forwards, and so be it. But we can't recruit bigs or just bodies, and they're not really set for the ACC. You know, they got to have or they don't at this point. So we can only hope, that part of it works out. But as far as inside as well, I mean. What I do like about our backcourt is they can drive to the hoop. They can create opportunities, especially inside if we're having issues there. I saw that, where they're able to draw defenders, get the guy open underneath, and dish the ball out. I mean, obviously we're not going to, you know, play in the big, you know, in the NCAA tournament anytime soon, but I felt watching that game, it was less painful than what we saw last year. I mean, granted, they did finish, I think, 8-5 in their non-conference schedule last year, despite, you know, some really bad starts. I mean, they start off losing to Navy and some other crappy teams. Although they did manage to beat, they did manage to beat Duquesne. Thank God. At 8-5 last year, we thought that they would win at least one or two ACC games, and they didn't. Of course, they gave Notre Dame a game in the ACC tournament. And it was, you know, we thought maybe it was, you know, maybe it was starting to look up, but at the end of the day, it gave, you know, Heather, you know, an opportunity to get a clean break from the coach that was hired and bring in somebody new. And of course, Capel was the right hire because we needed an ACC guy, a blue blood, say the least. Because Kevin Stallings just wasn't it. I think at this point with Stallings, he was more of a Danny type, or he had success in a long time for a school. Well, he's probably better suited at a smaller school, smaller program. But he got his big buyout, so I'm sure he's probably somewhere vacationing with his kids or his wife. Whatever. Now, as far as the women's program goes, I watched that game. They played Central Florida, and Central Florida last year, they were 22-10, they were 12-4 in the AAC, but they ended up in the women's NIT. And if you look really at their strength of schedule, it really wasn't all that great either. And I'm not sure the AAC is much to look at because UConn pretty much runs that conference in terms of women's hoops. But still, 20-plus win team, pit-faced. The women led for most of the game. Actually, I think for about a good 2.5 quarters they led. They start off hot in the first period, and it was, you know, they were on pace to beat the women. They were on pace to beat UCF 48-12, I think is what it was. I mean, that's how big this was. But of course, Central Florida turned up the pressure, and the Pitt women faced a lot of double teams in their own offensive zone. And it created a lot of havoc and led to a lot of turnovers. And the crappy part was the Central Florida was able to convert a lot of those turnovers into points. And that's where they got a lot of their points from, was turnovers. Central Florida eventually took a lead. They were up 35-30. Then the Pitt women went on an 11-0 run to make it 41-35. But then Central Florida outscored them the rest of the way. I think it was 26-13. Yeah, they outscored 26-13 to end the game. Pitt women had a shot at the end to tie it and go to overtime. They ended up bricking two threes. And that was that. But as far as women goes, they defended a lot. They were very ferocious on the defensive end. They had a lot of energy, which reflects off their coach. It's just they made a lot of mistakes. I mean, they made some really bad passes as well. A lot of them were careless passes. So, I hope that Lance White, take some time and film to work on some of these things. Because, I mean, obviously, there's, you know, with the women, this is a team that was really bad last year. And they lost some, they lost, you know, their best players. He's going to need a lot out of them. but you have to hope that the ship doesn't sail. Because he's obviously a nice guy, has a lot of energy, but I just hope he's very demanding of these as well, because you don't want to be a nice guy to your players. And of course, sometimes you're too nice, it's all right for them to screw up and keep losing. But anyways, if you got time, check a Pitt women's game out. It looks really good. Now we got the Pitt football coming up. They're at Virginia Tech at the 3:30 kickoff, so no noon game, and hopefully no crappy ACC network to deal with as well. You know, which means people like me can actually turn on the television and watch a game for once. But as far as the game goes itself, Virginia Tech is, defensively is a show of its former self. They're near the bottom in pass defense. So if Pitt really wants to get their offensive, their passing game going, this would be a good team to do it against. I mean, I wouldn't expect them to go fold, like, you know, have Kenny Pickett start slinging the ball like Dan Marino. But at least, you know, get some short passes, some screen plays. Because obviously, you know, Tech can't defend it. And of course, that running game as well. Get that going. Because obviously, that's what you got at this point. But, I expect some play actions to Maurice French as well. I expect that to happen. And I won't complain about that either. Just as long as we're hitting the receiver and not throwing picks. I would like to see him get the ball in the hands of Aaron Matthews more. Because, you know, he had a nice little catch against Duke. Well, not Duke, I mean Virginia, I'm sorry. It seems we have some talented athletes at receiver. It's just giving the ball is just a big issue. But offensively, supposedly Tech has a very highly talented quarterback. I watched him play and I wasn't really that impressed with him. He's more like he's a notch above Pickett, and that's not really saying much at this point. But their offensive line isn't all that great, so. If Pitt can get to him like they did, like they did with Virginia, I think they'll have no problems. It just depends on which Pitt defense shows up. If it's the one that is lackadaisical against Duke, or is it the one that at Virginia where they just beat the shit out of them? So I'm hoping it's the latter, the one that beats the shit, because I don't want any of this high scoring crap. Let's also not forget, as highly talented as Virginia Tech was last year, Pitt came within possession of putting that, of winning it. Or at least let alone sing it to overtime. Justin Weah just could not run that last guy, that was all. But with that, we know what happened there, whereas we made some bad play calls, and for one thing at the time, Pickett was on a roll, and you let your quarterback finish the job, and we called some really bad running plays, and that was that. But this time around, I think Pitt will be able to take him, because Beamer Ball really isn't isn't there no more, and the Bud Foster defense is a shell of his former self. I think in the case of Tech, if they're a clean house, I think Bud Foster probably goes. If anything, that guy probably just needs a change of scenery. But depending on how the game goes, if your team wins, it's probably going to be by a touchdown. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's probably going to be like a low-scoring 24-17, 28-21 type of game. I don't see it being anything higher than that. Now, if you look at the rest of the college football weekend, well, tonight we have a game. We have an ACC Thursday night game. Wake and NC State. NC State is still, despite some losses, they're 14th ranked, which is odd. But they should be able to handle Wake, and Wake just not having a good season this year. It seemed like they were coming on last year, but it's one of those things where I guess it's a sophomore type of thing with the new coach. Or the newer coach, I should say. Friday night, we got another ACC matchup. We got Syracuse and Louisville. Louisville is terrible, and Syracuse should be able to handle them with no problems. I'm not sure what's happened with Louisville, but even with Lamar Jackson, they were for the most part a mediocre football team last year. And if anything, maybe Lamar, he covered up a lot of things. And it's easy to do when you have a really good offensive player. Good offense tends to cover up, a lot of deficiencies. Same with a bad defense as well. Not bad defense, a good defense. West Virginia goes as it will be at home against TCU. TCU was highly talented early in the year, but they have a good defense. It's just their offense really sputtered this year, and it hasn't gone any better. But this game's at Morgantown, and I think that the Big 12 has been more, I guess you could say, accommodating to West Virginia in terms of scheduling. Because I remember when they first started Big 12 play, they won a big game against Texas at Austin. And they were, I guess, we put them to 5-0, I believe. And I thought that at the time, the Big 12 was theirs to lose because they were playing so good. But then the next week, they had to fly out to Lubbock to play Texas Tech. And I figure the way this traveling is going for them, if this keeps up, they're not ever going to be able to compete the way they want to in the Big 12 because they have to keep flying out for these freaking games back-to-back. But here they're at home, and they should be able to take care of TCU because it's a big game. There's playoffs on the line, and I'm sure Morgantown's going to pack this, is going to be filled. Because West Virginia's winning. When West Virginia doesn't have a good product, the fans don't show up. So don't believe all that bullshit that they actually consistently fill their stadium. Their stadium isn't like they talk about filling their stadium like it's Penn State on a Saturday afternoon. And it really isn't the case at all. When their team isn't good, their stadium's half empty. Wisconsin and Penn State. Now this game's at Penn State. I think Penn State handles Wisconsin. I'm not sure what happened to Paul Chryst's team, but Wisconsin has a good, they can run, they can defend, it's just they can't throw. And Alex Holdingbrook got all this really, he got all this hype from last year. Now, I don't understand why. People said that he was going to be the guy this year. To look out for in terms of quarterback. And I thought to myself, this guy can barely play, let alone complete a pass. I mean, in the Big 12, the Big 10 title game, he was horrible. So, what exactly is going to improve with him from year one to year from this past year to this year? I mean, at this point, Alex Hornibrook just is what he is. And he's not going to get any better. He's a poor man's Tyler Palko. And good Lord, he's not even close to that. That's being generous. Because he's not really close to that at all. I mean, I was bummed when we lost him. We decommitted the pick to go follow Paul Chryst. But thank God he did, because he's really bad. And I believe Wisconsin does have a really good quarterback in the wings. It's either he's not on campus yet, or he's not ready yet. But I'm sure that's the thing about the Wisconsin teams are they're really good. It's just that they never have a good quarterback. And if they would ever have a serviceable quarterback, they would win more games. I mean, they did have Russell Wilson one year, but of course, Brett Bielema was their coach. and they had a whole bunch of brain farts. You know, with the team they had that year with Russell Wilson, they should have went undefeated that year and probably played for a national championship. But they had some brain fart losses, because that's what bulimic teams would do. And at the end of the day, you know, his final season, they won the Big Ten title. He dropped 70 on his opponent, and he left to go to Arkansas. But a lot of people will tell you is that Bulimic really didn't do a whole lot. It was more he had really good assistant coaches, and they pretty much did all the work. And he was just the CEO. But, of course, when he had to go to a new place, he obviously couldn't hire the coaches that he had. Now, we have a Big Ten, a huge Big Ten match between Ohio State and Michigan State. Ohio State needs to keep themselves in line for the college football playoff. It's at Michigan State. On paper, I would think Michigan State will win this game, but Ohio State has really good athletes. But of course, they suck on offense as well. They're overrated for the most part. I think D'Antonio gives them a game, but I think Michigan State finds a way to lose this one like they always do. Because they just have better athletes. But, you know, like I said, I'm not a good gambling person. I'm not a good pick 'em person, obviously, because I've been really wrong these past weeks. So if you're betting, you probably want to go the other way. And, of course, there's Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. That's a big game. Oklahoma State just choked away a game against Baylor. So Oklahoma should have no problem winning this game. Auburn and Georgia. Auburn, for some reason, is still ranked, and I have no idea why. They suck. Georgia should handle them with no problem. Well, it depends which Georgia team shows up. If it's the one that, you know, it's sleepwalks or one that, you know, goes and takes care of business. But I think, you know, Georgia at this point wants to take care of business. I think they've learned their lesson. LSU got Arkansas, and that should be no big deal there, because Arkansas is terrible for the most part. Texas and Texas Tech. I think Tech wins that one. Tech loves to pull up points up, and I just don't think that Texas can keep that pace up. I think Tom Herman, you know, finds something else to cry about, and they lose this one as well. I mean, he's starting to have a meltdown now. He just seems like he comes off as a real petty bitch when he loses games. I mean, it's part of your growing pains, dude. You've been hired. They hired you to actually get this program back to winning. Suck it up. A big, giant ACC matchup Saturday night. Clemson and Boston College. Now, we talk about the idea of Pitt. That Pitt could give Clemson a hard time. And it could beat them, maybe, because, you know, Pitt does that where they just, where they're heavily underdog and they pull wins out of their ass like this. But Boston College has been playing really, really good this year. Nadazio's done a hell of a job. But we saw what happened with NC State and Clemson. Clemson took care of business, but BC has been known at times to pull this crap as well. But I think that I think BC will put up more of a fight. But I think Clemson wins this one. I just don't think it's going to be a blowout, though. But anyways, guys, that should wrap up the weekend for the college football. In fact, let me look through the rest of the games here. Oh, there's North Carolina at Duke. Oh, that's a huge matchup. Oh, that's not basketball, though. I think Duke takes care of this one, and obviously it makes and of course another week where we bitch about the North Carolina loss. Liberty, Virginia, I think recovers and takes care of that. That looks like an easy game. Miami, Georgia Tech, really nice matchup here. I think Georgia Tech is going bowling because Miami is just falling apart the heels. And, of course, there's Notre Dame. I left this one out. Third-ranked Notre Dame against Florida State. Now, Ian Book, it's been announced that he'll be out for this game because of a rib injury. But Florida State is really bad. So I think if Notre Dame just, plays it safe. Because the guy that they had was an issue to start before Book replaced him. He should take care of that as well. Now, so that wraps the college football weekend. At least the quote-unquote preview. Now, Le'Veon Bell is supposed to be coming back. I'm not sure how this bodes for James Conner, but Le'Veon Bell obviously has been tweeting upset on letters, and I get it. I don't really fault Le'Veon Bell for what he did. He took a calculated risk because he wanted to get paid what he felt was what he deserved. And hey, we all feel we deserve a certain pay. But but there's a fine line between being realistic and feeling what you deserve. Because we all work hard. And we all feel that we're underpaid for what we do. And we should deserve more. So our option is to go put resumes out and see what we can get. But you have to be careful when you do it, and you have to be discreet about it, because people find that you're looking for jobs, it won't be good. It doesn't really bode well, especially when a company wants to make budget cuts. They're usually the first to go. Le'Veon Bell took a risk, and it backfired. Mainly because he felt he could hold the Steelers hostage. But then, of course, James Conner really came on. And, then you have the argument where was Le'Veon Bell good because of the system the Steelers run? Because James Conner was able to come in and pick it right up? Or just James Conner's overall better, because Conner's obviously a lot quicker. He's a lot younger and he's a lot more healthier now. Whereas the latter, Bell has had a hard time finishing a full season, although he did finish a full one last year. And before that, it was either he got suspended or he got injured around playoff time, because the year the Steelers went to the, I believe it was the AFC title game against New England, he was hurt. And we had no one to help out running back. There was a backup that wasn't too bad. I forget the freak his name was. D'Angelo Hall, I believe, or Russell. No, that's basketball. D'Angelo Williams, I believe. It was one of those guys. Well, he's good. He was good. He just wasn't looking on Bell good. I believe he wasn't healthy for that game either. So, of course, it made things a lot easier for the Steelers to lose that game. Because they had no running back option. So now as Bell comes back, he hasn't really played all season. And I sincerely hope he's been training. Because you'd hate to see him coming out of shape. Either he signs his tender and he, just rides the bench, comes in reserve. I mean, I think what he should be doing is coming in and playing, because he's gonna need something to sell the next team he plays for. Because if he comes in and plays like shit, they're not gonna give him anything next year. They're gonna say, well, you set up most of last year, and of course, You came in, you're out of shape, and you didn't play good. So we're not going to give you whatever you want. The hell with you. So I hope he's staying in shape, and if he does, he has to really come and perform, because if he doesn't, well, he really overplayed his hand, and the Steelers obviously are still winning without him, and obviously Connor's having a hell of a season, but it'd be good to have a nice little back to compliment Connor as well, because you want somebody to give Connor a break. So, hopefully that works out. And, that's all I'm going to say about that. Anyways, guys, I'm going to close up here. And, I hope you all voted. Because we all need to. I know a lot of you guys follow me. You probably listen to this podcast, and we all have different political leanings, whether they're left, right, middle of the road, extreme left, extreme right, whatnot. But one thing we all know for certain is we all have to vote, because one thing in particular is we all have the same amount of votes, and it's one vote, and we have to use it, because if we don't, it's something that could be easily taken away from us. And regardless of who the candidates are, if you hate them or not, you still you gotta get out and vote, and you gotta use it. Because if you don't show up for the polls, your voice isn't heard, and less voices means more control. So always use that thing. I mean, my dad's a veteran. He's a Vietnam vet, Bronze Star medalist. For bravery, obviously. I remember one time I didn't vote in the presidential election, and I think it was the. I'm trying to think which one that was. It was the Bush. Yeah, it was the George Bush, Al Gore election. I didn't vote because I hated both candidates, and I was still in college, and I didn't vote. And my dad, being a veteran as he is, was really pissed off about it. I mean, he was really, really mad. And he said, "You didn't vote?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Why in hell did you vote?" And I said, "Because I didn't like the candidates. They're both idiots. It was pointless for me to go to the polls." I remember my dad chewing me out at the dinner table over it. And pretty much he said, "You know what? I don't know what it is, but he said that's a horrible excuse." He said, "I don't know what your deal is, but next time that happens, you need to get your ass out there to the polls and vote." He said, "Because that's your duty." Basically told me, as an American, that's my duty, to get out and vote. And, I didn't really get it at that point. But now, years and years later, I do now. Now that I've been through out of college into the real world working, I get it all now from him as to why it was, I had to do this. So, we all may disagree on a lot of things, but we can all agree on one thing. We have to get out and vote. And to keep doing it. But anyways, guys, have a good weekend. Have fun. Hell to pit. Let's hope for a good-ass showing at Heinz. Because I know we're trying out all the all-time greats. We're trying out James Conner, Tony Dorsett. Let's hope for a much different result than we've had any time we've done this. Bye, guys.